the vault of startling monster horror tales of terror.
Hello, my little plasma-pumping pals. This is the Chris Keeper. After 2 months of science fiction, I am pleased to announce that we are going back to the butcher knife. Yes, it's going to be the last John Carpenter film for a while, so we picked a doozy. It's Halloween! We're talking old-school Shatner mask. We're talking Mikey Myers and Donnie Pleasance. I can't wait to see what kind of hijinks they get up to. Oh, boy.
Hello and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. We're back on the horror track from a little sidebar into science fiction with John Carpenter. And I am here with Luke Giaconetti.
Hey, everybody, how we doing tonight?
And the hair metal hero.
Hey, guys. Yeah, girls, maybe.
And, to sort of more or less polish off the John Carpenter string of movies, we're finishing off with the classic, the breakout, the piles of teenage body movie, Halloween.
You know what's funny is you say the piles of teenage bodies.
It's not that big a pile in this movie,
not,
really.
It's not that big a pile. And this, you know, for this, I always lump Halloween together with Texas Chainsaw Massacre insofar as their reputations for being these gore fests. These are films that get by on suspense, paranoia, the audience having a depth of knowledge that the characters don't have, and what I call the general sense of dread. And if a film can produce that general sense of dread, you have succeeded in making a horror film. And Carpenter, that's what he hits here.
Yes. It's really funny because upon watching this again for the show, I was like, this is a really slow-paced movie. And except for a couple nipples, you could flop this right on network TV at 8 o'clock in the evening. Yep. I don't think there's even any swearing that's, you know, beyond the TV level these days in it. There's just a couple boobies, and that's it.
And it's easily edited out. One of my notes is I was watching this on the Anchor Bay Extended Television Edition DVD, and I said DVD versus years of watching this on TV and then tape. Because growing up in New York, WPIX used to show Halloween all the time in October, Halloween and Halloween 2. I must have seen these movies a dozen times on Channel 11 growing up. And, you know, so you're right. This movie translates so well to TV, and it's so little gets changed or edited. You know, a second here, a second there. It's the same damn movie.
These days, all you have to do is do that little... You know, the little penis blur that they do on TV nowadays whenever there's nudity. So, you know, you could even have the movie run fully, and because they're not like full out floppies. They're just sort of there if you're paying attention.
Yeah. And PIX was, like I said, the only real part that's missing. There's a little bit of Linda and Paul flopping around on the bed. That's about the only thing that was cut. None of the violence was cut, you know, none of that. My note was referring to just the clarity of watching this film on DVD versus years and years of watching it on TV. There's watching it on DVD now, you're like, wow, I never realized that.
Yes.
That was there the whole time. But no, I mean, you're right. This is, do you get any more classic, a horror film than the original Halloween? You know, I mean, everybody knows this story, or everybody thinks they know it, but there's the reason why this is a classic. In fact, this has been put into the it's part of the Library of Congress because it's what do they call aesthetically significant. Is that their term?
Historically
and aesthetically significant, something like that. You know, it's like if you got a film that has that kind of staying power, clearly you've hit the right nerves, you know?
Oh, he definitely hit the right nerves. I mean, how many Halloween movies were there? 10, 11?
Too fucking many.
Well, it's the thing. If you're counting the original series, not the two films by Rob Zombie, there are 8. Now, Season of the Witch, of course, does not involve the Myers story at all. That's a little side story into some druidism and magic. But the Michael Myers narrative lasts for 7 films, sort of.
See, the whole, when he became Michael Myers, when they started referring to him in movie titles and publicity as Michael Myers, it really turned me, because as a kid, when that movie came out, I thought of him as the boogeyman, you know, or just the shape is what he got called a lot, you know, and that's way more scarier than Michael Myers, you know, it just is. And,
it instantly humanizes him.
Yeah, so, why you want to humanize him? You know, there ain't no humanizing going on there.
What's interesting is that there's a the novelization, which I got at a used bookstore when I was a little kid. We were on a family vacation in the train country in Pennsylvania, and the novelization's by Curtis Richards. And there's a little bit that there's some extended bits in there where they talk about Samhain and some of the curse stuff, which ironically would get used later in the series. But there's a scene where before he murders Judith, Michael and some of his friends are going trick or treating, and Judith, you know, she's being a bitch because, you know, she's waiting for her boyfriend to come over so she can screw. And she says, "Well, what if I don't give you any candy?" And Michael yells from the crowd, "Then we're going to kill you." And she goes, "Who said that? Was that you, Michael Myers?" He goes, "I'm not Michael Myers. I'm a clown." So, you know, there's some little extra bits where already he doesn't identify as himself as Michael Myers. You know, there's that disconnect from reality.
That's why he wants those masks so bad. He's always looking for the mask so he can go away, you know. As soon as the mask goes on, the knife comes up.
And you want, you know, you guys on all your shows, you're always looking for some kind of a Star Trek connection.
Uh-huh. Oh, big one right here.
Big Star Trek connection. The shape mask is a Captain Kirk mask that's been painted white.
It's awesome, and it's just once you know that, you can't unknow it. So every time you see the mask come out of the darkness, you're like, here comes Kirk. And it's also, and the way that it fits over the misshapen head of him too, it makes it more like the modern sort of fat Shatner Kirk. You know what I mean?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, nothing scarier than William Shatner coming to get you.
I was actually looking. Those original Shatner masks go for a pretty penny on eBay, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, this is a film that, I, given the opportunity, I could talk about all night. And it's just because there's so many good shots, good scenes, little touches that, you know, ring true when you watch them, and like I said, it's amazing. This film made in 1978 has no real gore or, you know, and some very, very minor nudity, but this is a genre classic just because of the ability to produce suspense, and we've gotten so far away from that. We got so far away from that so quickly after this movie came out that, you know, I think a lot of people forget the power of this film even now. Even, like I said, I've seen this movie at least 100 times. I'm still yelling at the TV at times, you know?
Yeah. It's still intense when he sits up after, you know, getting stabbed outside the closet. But I remember when I was a kid, this movie got so hyped up by Siskel and Ebert, and especially Roger Ebert. Roger Ebert loved this movie and was like, this is the scariest movie I've seen, you know, maybe in my entire life. And he kept impressing that this is not for children. This is a hard R movie. He kept saying it's a good thing this is rated R because it's just nonstop scary. And then they would show the closet scene.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember just going, oh, good Lord. He's like, this is just gritty, you know, very violent and stuff like that. And that never, it hasn't been until I've been watching it in the last like 10 years where I've been like, wait a minute, this isn't that violent at all. You know, this is not a hard R movie. It was just really intense at the time. But during the same time period, Friday the 13th was sort of happening. And,
that was 2 years later. Yeah.
And then
it was 1980.
And then it turned into, you know, into an exercise in gore. And the second Halloween was, was much, you know, had a bit of gore in it. You know,
I mean,
a bit
more gore. Halloween 2 is as bad as any of the ripoffs of Halloween,
right.
as far as just being a geek show. You know, the closet, you mentioned the closet scene, and that you can't beat that for just sheer intensity. But the one that I always loved as a kid, and is still my favorite, absolute favorite shot in the movie, is after Bob and Linda hook up upstairs. You know, he goes downstairs to get the beers, and then he's looking around for Annie and Paul.
I think I know where you're going, yeah.
And when he turns around and opens the pantry door, and the shape just bam pops out and grabs him by the throat. That I love it. That scene gets me every time, and I have a shape costume that I've worn on numerous Halloweens, and one time was when I was a senior in high school, and I basically just stalked the halls.
Oh God!
In character. Well, my buddy JR, he's a fan too, and so we hooked this up where basically I was standing in the doorway to the men's room, right. And he's talking to his girlfriend and some of her friends, and you know he's talking, and he says, "Okay." So he's like, "I'm gonna say I'll be right back, and then I'm gonna come in." And so, he does that, and he turns around and goes to open the door, and right as he opens the door, bam! I pop out and grab him by the throat, and his girlfriend Jen and her friends, they screamed, "High holy hell!" At 8 o'clock in the morning in the Catholic high school, I was like, score, we got it.
Well, I could never pull that off at my Catholic high school. It was all dudes.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess, man. I could have grabbed one of the female teachers or something, but then,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that might not have worked out so well.
No, we had a couple that were worth grabbing.
Then after school, I basically stalked him throughout all the halls, and he would stop and grab every door and shake it to make it open, you know? And he managed to run into, and he would run into everyone in the hallway. God, we had fun with that.
You know,
all you needed was a bald kid with you, yeah. Six shooter. You don't understand. I fired at him six times.
That's the ultimate evil.
I love his line. The evil is gone.
It's gone. Ah!
Come on.
Where's my monkey?
What? fate never changes. There's just all these. You know, he's almost to the point of being ridiculous. Scenery chewing, but just on the edge. It's because it's Donald Pleasant, and he knows his scenery chewing, and it's just awesome. And it's funny. I get the idea that maybe Donald Pleasant's was filmed at a different time, you know, and just sort of edited into the movie.
Yeah, it's basically him and Sheriff Brackett
and the sheriff
hiding out in the bushes. Yeah,
I'm very surprised the sheriff didn't buy it in this movie. That I totally would have expected the sheriff to buy it, but it turns out that or be useful in some way, but the sheriff is never useful in any way in this movie. He's just always sort of standing around like, I don't know, some kids broke in and stole some knives and rope.
Yeah, I could see no problem here.
Yeah, he's only in there because his daughter's one of the victims, you know?
Well, the thing is, he mentioned knives and ropes as if it was just to assume that that's what kids steal all the time. Kids are always stealing knives and rope. You know, those kids are that with their knives and rope.
Yeah.
But
they kind of make up for that in Halloween 4, where you know the sheriff goes on the full offensive, and every single cop gets massacred, and they like to completely decimate the police station. So they kind of make up for it. You know,
give it a little Terminator edge to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
There is no Halloween 4. There is only Halloween.
I haven't watched anything past Halloween 3, so I don't know any of it to judge it. But I was never interested. You know what I mean? Even when Jamie Lee Curtis came back.
The problem is she only comes back very well. H2O is kind of that's the thing. The Halloween sequels get real weird. I'm serious, because 4, 5, and 6 kind of tell their own little story, and there's some good elements to it, but they're almost like, you know, like when you make a really good movie and then you have the official comic book sequel.
Yes.
That's kind of what Halloween 4, 5, and 6 are like. It's like if Dark Horse had the license and made a couple of miniseries, that's what they'd be like, you know. And then you get H2O, which is just is just a complete left field sort of movie. You know, where it's like, oh well, you know, forget all that. We're gonna reimagine this through the Kevin Williamson, Wes Craven, Scream era.
Right, right.
Yeah, and it's just an oddball movie.
I fucking hate it.
Did they want to make it maybe sort of like, I can't remember which Freddy it was, the Freddy one that was sort of meta too, you know?
It doesn't even go meta, Chris. You're always talking about trying to cast WB style, you know,
right,
the young kids. That's exactly what Halloween
Yeah, wasn't it like Ice Cube in it or something? Or
was it Busta Rhymes?
Busta Rhymes.
No, Busta Rhymes was in the one after that.
After that, okay.
I can't. There is a stunt cast black guy in H2O. The only thing I liked about H2O is that Janet Leigh has a cameo, and she's actually driving the car from Psycho. I thought that was funny, but that's not a reason to watch a movie.
Right,
you know?
Right. That doesn't make the movie any good.
The thing about Resurrection is that the original script for Resurrection was actually pretty decent. You know, when you were talking, you know, especially when you consider it was made in 2002, and we were kind of, you know, there wasn't Twitter yet, there wasn't, you know, text messaging. So it involved chat rooms and bulletin boards and things of that nature. So for the technology of the time, it was pretty decent. What ended up on the screen, however, was not anything but decent. So
I think that's a big point we got to discuss about Halloween is the Mustafa Akkad, who owns the property, is just, he is going to wring every last drop of blood from Michael Myers because he has nothing else.
That's absolutely true.
And
I mean,
sad.
You know, what's funny is that, you know,
it's sad, but it's making his kids fat and happy, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jason X, the 10th Friday the 13th film where he ended up in space in the future.
Which is actually good.
Well, it's actually good, but, you know, the idea of putting Michael Myers on a spaceship was bandied about in the early 90s. Or the mid 90s, so you know it's like it's funny because on Friday the 13th, that's just ridiculous enough that we're willing to accept it.
Yeah,
but Halloween apparently that's too far. So
didn't any of these people see Hellraiser Bloodlines? Come on,
Chris, you know no one saw Hellraiser Bloodlines.
I didn't see Hellraiser Bloodlines, so I know that.
I've seen it on video.
I think I've seen the first two Hellraisers, and that's about it.
And that's where Hellraiser ends. In my opinion.
Good.
You know what really made me smile here is I love the Dr. Dementia show that the kids are watching on Halloween night.
Yeah, they're watching some good movies.
Yeah, well, it's like John Carpenter's ability to put clips from all his favorite movies in this. If they could have figured out a way to put Fort Apache in there, you know, it'd have been everybody.
I like how prescient it was having the thing in there, though, you know.
And I had to laugh that they do, because, you know, one of the scenes we see from the thing is when they're lining up around the ship,
mm-hmm.
and the guy yells, "Holy cats!" You know,
it all comes back to the thing.
Holy cats! Oh, and then, of course, Forbidden Planet. You gotta love that.
That's one of my favorite movies of all time. I love that movie, and it was really nice to see. I forgot about all I forgot about a lot of things about this movie. You know, it reminds me a lot of Jaws.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, you know, there's an attack at the front end, and there's water in the attack, but there's an attack on a woman in the front of it, and then you have just a lot of long story, you know, just setting up all the characters. And then, you know, a climactic battle, you know, just nonstop ending. And Michael Myers, or the Shape, or whatever you want to call him, and the shark in Jaws are both so, like, their music is a character in the movie. The music, there's really no music in Halloween unless Michael Myers is in play. And that's how you know the shit's hitting the fan, because and the build up of that music when we were in we must have been in middle school when that came out on HBO, and my friend George Clark had HBO, so he always got to see, and his parents always took him to R-rated movies, so he always got to report to us. But once HBO got Halloween and we all got to see Halloween, you know, we would just walk down the hall, you know, behind people, and one of us would just start going, dum, da-dum, dun, 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 and then like you know, a few beats later, another one of us would kick in with ding, 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 ding,
yeah.
ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding,
ding. Oh yeah.
I tell you, you know what? My absolute favorite use of the music is when after Lori goes over to the Wallace house and she finds all her dead friends. And then the shape, he cuts her in the arm and she falls over the top and then she runs out of the house.
Yes.
That whole sequence from where she runs next door and starts banging on the door and they turn the lights off. And then she runs back over to the Doyle house and it's just that long shot, the same shot we've been getting the entire film from the front door of the Doyle house across the street to the Wallace house.
Yeah.
And the shape's just walking.
Yeah.
And he's just walking. It's like, oh, that just sets your teeth on edge. And with the way the music is going, it's like it's that doo doo dan 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 doo doo dan. It's like, holy crap! Come on, Tommy, open the damn door.
And Tommy's doing the.
Yeah, I'm tired. It's like seriously, and it's like seriously, I'm sleeping with Lindsay Wallace in here. Everybody, even the little kids, are getting action, and Laurie's not getting anything.
It's funny now, as an adult looking at Jamie Lee Curtis in there, the young Jamie Lee Curtis. She looks older than she does in some of her subsequent movies after that.
Yeah.
The way he dresses her and her demeanor and stuff, she's got that 30-year-old teenager thing going.
Yeah.
And it was also the beginning of the whole trend in the good girls versus the drinking and
that's not true.
Yeah, it started earlier.
She smokes dope earlier in the movie.
She does, but that that's the end of the 70s. They wanted to show she wasn't too prissy. You know, she was on the verge of sexuality and stuff, and her friends were just ahead of her, But
Very ahead.
To the point of almost like total crassness. And it's funny because they talk about like kids sexting each other and stuff these days and hooking up and stuff like that. It's like it was just as bad in the 70s.
Yeah, it's just you didn't have the technology. The pinnacle of 70s technology that we see here is Bob's shaggin' wagon that he pulls up to the Wallace house in. It's like, oh my god, dude, seriously? Why do you need to go in the house?
Yeah, there were all the problem, like you had to run for the phone. You had to run for the phone. Sometimes you had a little kid who would be like, she's not here. I'll get, all that stuff.
I love they take the phone off the hook.
Yeah.
Kids today wouldn't understand what that even means.
Well, that's the thing about, I guess, why you can't do a horror movie like Halloween these days, because, it would be like Michael Myers is like planning, he's in his old house and he's eating his dog and he's like, all right, going over his to-do list for the day. And it's like, all right, stalk, stalk, stalk. I'm going to drive by the schoolyard in my car and then I'm going to go and I'm going to cut all the phone lines to the girls I'm going to kill. Well, that ain't gonna do nothing these days,
Yes.
I mean, in this movie, it would have been like, 45 minutes in, there would have been 800 cell phones out, and he would have been surrounded by, the entire sheriff's department.
Speaking of driving, who the hell taught him to drive when he was in an insane asylum?
They mentioned that. That's one of my notes too. Is he's a pretty good driver, but they had that like he doesn't even know how to drive, and
maybe someone has been giving him lessons.
Yes, he's been doing a pretty good job of it.
It's Dr. Wynn, actually. I'm serious. The in character quote, I'm doing air quotes up to the mic. The in character explanation is Dr. Wynn, the administrator that we see Dr. Loomis arguing with.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Wynn becomes the man in black in 4, 5, and 6, who's the head of the druidic cult.
Oh.
That released him, and it's like, yeah, and you see why things get a little too complex here.
But Halloween ends after this one. So.
That's why I did air quotes.
Except for three's okay. I like
three's okay.
We'll have to do a special episode of three for like an April Fool's Day or something. Yeah, I'm just dying to see that movie again.
Oh, so good.
Happy Halloween.
That fucking jingle scares the shit out of me, man.
Silver Shamrock.
Actually, you know, talking about Dr. Wynn, like I said, I did watch the extended television cut of this.
Yeah, me too.
And what's interesting is that there's basically three scenes that are added, or four scenes that are added. Right after the initial scene, the murder of Judith, instead of cutting to Lori, you know, going to school, we cut to Dr. Loomis at the review board, where, you know, he's arguing to have Michael put into a maximum security facility instead of a minimum security facility. The next scene is, it must be one of your favorites, Hero. We get to see, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis in a robe and a towel wrapped around her head.
I'm not going to lie, man. She's so frumpy looking in this movie that it's just like, oof, no.
I was looking forward to this in a sort of pervy way of being like, ah, young Jamie Lee Curtis. I love the young Jamie Lee Curtis movies. But yeah,
she hadn't grown into her body yet.
Well, and the thing is, she's wearing the towel around her head because these were shot in 1980 and she had short hair. The third scene is the one that's most interesting because in it we see Loomis looking over Michael's room after he escapes. And one of the things they show, and from what I understand, this was something that that Carpenter wanted to get into the film but just couldn't work it in for pacing issues or whatever originally, is he's carved the word sister into his door.
Yeah,
I remember so that.
Like I said, I saw this one on TV all the time. I always thought that was part of the movie, you know. So when I first saw it on tape, on commercial tape, I'm like, hey, where's that part? That's not they took that part out. You know? So I always consider that to be part of the film. You know, the other scenes are kind of, you know, I can take them or leave them, but that one I find to be an important part of it.
Yeah, I like the TV version, but I like the added scenes quite a bit. Especially because you get more Loomis being crazy.
Yeah.
I tell you, the boy is pure evil.
Hey, he just takes every opportunity to go, he's not a man, he's not a human, you know. It's so melodramatic, it's awesome.
Yeah.
But that scared the hell out of me as a little kid, everything he said, you know. I took it to heart.
Well, it's like, who would you be more scared of meeting in a dark alley at Halloween night? Michael Myers or Professor Loomis?
It's hard to say. It's hard to say.
He's gonna, I tell you, you know, we talked about back when we did Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, easy Halloween costume idea. Easy Halloween costume idea. Dr. Sam Loomis. Just, you know, wear a frumpy shirt and overcoat. Get a skull cap and a gun and just grab people and shake them. It's the ultimate evil! Why don't you listen?
It would be good to be a kind of lumpy, balding, aging guy, too, to help. Which, I mean, I could...
Shut the fuck up.
Hey, man, I could do it.
It's the ultimate evil.
I could do it. I could... If I let my hair grow right, I can do Uncle Fester, man. No problem. Or, you know, or have my hair shaved completely off, I can do Uncle Fester.
Oh, is it just me, or do you think perhaps Professor Loomis and the President of the United States in Escape from New York are the same exact person?
You are the Duke of New York, you are A number one.
It's a
at one point, yeah, there's a deleted scene in Escape from New York where he grabs Plissken by the shirt and yells, he's the ultimate evil! I mean, he's pretty much the same guy as he is in Prince of Darkness. You know, he plays basically the same role, except he's a priest instead of a doctor.
Yeah, so he's being his it's like Samuel Jackson, you know. It's you got him.
When was the last time Samuel Jackson was actually a character? I don't even know.
It's hard to say, yeah. Maybe Star Wars.
Maybe. Even then.
No, see, characters have definition.
Yeah. But he didn't get to swear in Star Wars, so that was about...
Yeah, he did. It's on his lightsaber's hilt. It says bad motherfucker on it. Uh-oh. If you look really close, now everybody's going to go scrambling for their Blu-rays. I'm just fucking with people.
You know what's... we talked about that you couldn't make a movie like this nowadays. And part of that, I think, is something that throughout this entire series we've seen with Carpenter, where it's a throwback to an America that may or may not ever have existed, but in a nostalgic sense, it always has existed.
What state was this supposed to be in?
Illinois.
It's supposed to be Illinois.
They have lockers outside in Illinois. I'm looking at it, and I'm like, this is very, you know, like more like my neck of the woods, but lockers outside, I was thinking it's got to be California or something, but they don't have fall like that, you know?
Well, they didn't have fall like this either. I mean, they all the leaves that you see, the very few leaves that you see,
they kept using them over and over again.
Yeah, they were hand painted and had to continually be used. I mean, the film was shot in Pasadena, so.
all right, but, that makes sense. But it captures that Halloween feel of it captures that, and it captures the feel of night really well, especially in. Not really the suburbs, but sort of small town, with those kinds of houses and stuff, and manages to make it creepy. You know, that sort of bland all American look.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is put one pumpkin on the porch and light it right, and all of a sudden it looks, you know, like the scene of a crime, or a potential crime. It's awesome.
It is far-fetched as a lot of the horror movies us and the listening audience, like, it is something that could happen. I mean, it doesn't take much for some asshole to grab a knife and a mask and go around door to door killing people, you know?
And he doesn't do anything really outlandish either.
Nope.
There's no supernatural aspect here other than what we're putting onto it.
Well, it's you know, he does take a bullet to the head.
He does that. I mean, at the end, but I'm saying it's not like in a Friday the 13th film where, you know, we left him in one place and he's, you know, suddenly able to teleport to someplace else.
Right.
And, you know, here he gets shot and he keeps coming, but he doesn't, you know, he doesn't break the laws of physics when he's stalking his victims.
No,
either.
It's very meticulous. It's almost as if Carpenter, like, drew a map of the town and then, you know, traced his steps. He goes through everything like a machine, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but, you know, into that, and I mentioned before, little things that make the scenes ring true. When Lori's trying to escape from the Wallace house, she goes to the big glass doors in the kitchen, and he's got the rake planted up outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I absolutely love that. It's a little thing. It's like, well, he made sure she can't get out. You know, and then he punches through the door and everything. It's like, that's it again. It's like it's attention to detail like that makes me appreciate a slasher movie.
Well,
you know,
just like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you know, you think of like the guy in the leather face, and even you think even more so in Halloween that the guy in the Michael Myers outfit, all you need to do is get a big barrel chested guy to be Michael Myers, but the guy who is I don't know remember the name of the actor who played Michael Myers in this
Nick
movie.
Carpenter.
Yeah, his
that was a Nick Castle. Sorry,
his his body language is so creepy in this, and just the way he grabs things and does things is almost as if he's being animated from somewhere else. You know, like when he jumps on the car in the beginning, he jumps on it kind of supernaturally, like light footed. He's on top of the car, but when his hand comes down, it's just like this unstoppable thing. It just reaches around sort of without any thought of its injury or anything until it gets whatever it needs and then when he
smashes the window on the other side, you know, in the days before safety glass, you know.
Yes.
that was something to be, you know, oh man, that's another one that it's right, you know. We've already been put on our heels, like you made the comparison with Jaws. You know, we get put on our heels right away at the beginning of Jaws, but the girl gets killed, and here it's the same thing after Judith gets killed, and we found out it's you know, her little brother. And as an aside, let me just say this: my film professor in college pointed this out to me, and now I can't get it out of my head. Judith and her boyfriend have the absolute quickest quickie in the history of sex, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody.
I mean, they're up there, they sit there for like about 14 seconds, man.
And he's just like, whoop, up the door. She's like, you'll call me? He's like, yeah, whatever, bye.
Yeah, whatever.
That's how sex works in the Halloween movie. It's just sort of, it's handshake sex. And
And the other thing is, you know, they're cutting it awfully close. Because, you know, there's enough time from after her boyfriend leaves for Michael to go upstairs and kill her and walk down the stairs before her parents get home. That's cutting it pretty close, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, this,
I mean, I took some risks in high school, but you know,
say,
that's something else.
You know, there's, you know, they were really comfortable with going into someone else's house and just sort of camping out, lighting cigarettes, and
yeah,
you know, the whole
stealing their beer,
just casually. Well, you know, in the 70s, everybody just had their refrigerator stocked with beer anyway. It was like bottled water. You know, it was just like, Billy, grab a beer. You know, it was just
and it was all those pull top deals, right?
But you know, I mean, and when, you know, there's the one scene where he's grinding away on her for, you know, he's sort of frustrated because the phone keeps ringing. Then he finally gets on top of her.
Yeah.
He grinds away for about 10 seconds. Blah, and she's just laying there like, woo, that was awesome. I'm like, wow, these guys have set the bar low in the 70s, you know. That's why they but, you know, they have sex 40 times a day for 15 seconds, you know. But
yeah,
it works.
Totally.
It had there was almost a porn. There's almost the porn element of it as to how sex is handled in this movie, because it's not like a porno movie, but it has a sort of format to it. You know, there's hey, let's have some beer. Now we have sex. Let's light a cigarette. Now we get killed.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how it sort of works. You know, at least
I won't give you the blueprint for a standard porn scene then. It's just going to make me look really bad.
I'm sure there's many people who know what you're talking about.
And oh, I can go onto a scene anywhere, and I'll be like, this is what I want to see, and I'll put it right timestamp, and I'll be correct.
You know, with enough experience, you can figure that kind of stuff out. So,
hey, I got, like I said, I have not but time.
you should break it down into an equation, you know, into a formula.
Oh God, now I'm actually gonna write out
a
porno.
A pornula.
Yes. Oh man, you know, I tell you something else that I really get a kick out of is when Tommy pulls out the stack of comics. I love the titles that Laurie is reading, and the way that Jamie Lee Curtis's delivery is essentially the same now as it is in this movie, which I appreciate. But I love the way that she reads those titles: Laser Man, Neutron Man, Tarantula Man. I'd read Laser Man. I think that sounds like a good comic.
Well, that's the thing is, Jamie Lee Curtis is supposed to be what, like 17, 18 years old in this movie. She's such an old. She's just like, well, I can see why your parents don't want you to read this. It's just like, come on, lighten up just a little. You were smoking the joint,
yeah,
right?
But you know what though is that I can speak for myself. I knew girls like that in high school.
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
You know, and it's like, and they were like that. They were the you know, the girls that were like, they probably had a small fortune stashed away in babysitting, and you know, probably did like a guy, but would never tell anybody about it, and were always dressed substantially more conservatively than everyone else around them. So,
and they're the only ones worthy of living in the when the killers come.
Yeah.
Fuck that. I'm going for them first. If I ever become a homicidal maniac.
Well, okay, well, so when the frumpy girls start getting off, we'll know to look to Hero.
You heard it here first on Two True Freaks, yep. Next thing you know, Luke and I will be on CNN, just go, we thought he was kidding.
He was a quiet guy, never bothered anybody.
It didn't seem violent at all.
It's actually frustrating.
I tell you, it's pure evil.
The ultimate evil.
We tried to warn you.
The blackest of eyes.
Staring at the wall. Staring past the wall. To this night.
Oh, man. It's so good. Oh. I'll tell you, the scene that gets me still is when you don't know he's there, but when Jamie Lee Curtis gets to the top of the stairs and you just see his mask come out from that tiny little closet, and it's like, I know how they did the effect, and it's still fucking awesome every time. They just had a tiny light on a dimmer switch in that closet, and they just slowly raised it until you could see his mask, and it's like, that shit is awesome.
Well, you see just a glimmer of white, and you're like, oh no, please no, and then, you know, and it just, and that's, you know, I mean, and it was brilliant having the little kids in there too, because like when I was in middle school, I was in between identifying with Jamie Lee Curtis or identifying with those little kids.
You were identifying with Jamie Lee Curtis?
Well, you know, as a main character, as someone my age.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't the age of either of those characters. So both, you could almost identify with both. Because I remember those scenes were like, you know, the boogeyman's behind you.
Yes.
That, you know, that freaked out all of us when we were, those were, we were quoting that with Tommy all the time. Tommy, the classic little kid name, too.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, it's good to see children in peril in a film. It just, they don't do it enough.
Yeah, but none of them buy it. It's even better when you see them, when you see children buy it, and you know, but wasn't to be in this one.
Oh boy!
Should that be my goal? Should I get a Kickstarter going for an independent film where it's just me murdering children for 90
minutes?
Children
and frumpy women.
Yeah.
That could be part of the hair metal hero, the fictional hair metal hero's mission. You know,
he only
eliminate all frumpy women.
But that's great, because having that kind of psycho killer loose upon America. He only kills frumpy women who are sexually repressed and don't drink or do drugs or anything like that. All the girls are going to become promiscuous drunks just to stay alive. It's brilliant.
Actually, what was the name of it? There was an Australian movie a couple of years ago. I forget what it was called, where it was like that. It was a reverse slasher movie where the guy was he was killing all the virgins.
So everybody was going out to have sex in order to...
Right, they had a big orgy at the school to get it. I think it's called like Red or Stab or something like that. I can't think of it. I just remember that. It's like, that's like a total high concept movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, I probably had that written in a notebook somewhere.
Well,
I probably
would have
written it in a notebook, but I was probably too high to remember to do it.
Here's a question I have. When did Halloween become the night for all parents to go out?
Yeah.
Like New Year's.
Not in my town.
I was going to say, it's like, you know where I'm on, you know where I am on Halloween night? My wife's usually walking the kids up and down the street to go trick-or-treating, and I'm manning the bowl of candy, trying not to eat all of it.
Manning the bowl of candy, and going out on Halloween night and leaving your house unattended is just an invitation to get it egged or TP'd or whatever. So, yeah.
Or to have teenagers have sex in it and then get murdered, you know? I can't count the times that happened in my neighborhood. You know?
Well, this is one of the most underpopulated towns I've ever seen in my life. It just basically had a few teenagers walking around with them and a sheriff with no other police officers. You never saw any of the rest of his crew doing anything. They were useless. How big is that place? It can't be that big.
Well, it is small town America.
Yeah, but that small town America. I was working at this point before, and then I got sidetracked. I know, shocking. we've talked about this a lot with Carpenter. This nostalgia for this Americana that may or may not have ever existed. You know, this is a town where literally nobody locks their doors. But then it's the mundane, but then the mundane is made frightening when you inject something out of the ordinary into it. And that's why I really like what I call the suburban apathy scene, where, you know, you would think in a small town where everybody seems to know each other,
implausible to me.
Yeah, but you know what they're thinking inside is like, oh, she's drunk or she's high. Turn the light off, Harold. You know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah, but also in small towns, people love to get involved. They love to get their nose in the thing about Halloween. I think that freaked us out. Well, especially because we had the whole legend of John Carpenter being from our hometown, and the whole movie being based on a stabbing that happened in West Carthage, New York, and that town. That's very much what the. You know, where the part of our town that had the nice houses in it looked like. So it was very much like it had the feel of what it was like at Halloween in Carthage, except with no people anywhere, except in front of the hardware store when it gets broken into. So if you went and pounded on someone's door in Carthage, and And it couldn't have been really that late at night, you know. It wasn't like 3 a.m. or something like that, you know, because the parents would have probably been home by then. I found that a little bit implausible, but necessary for the story.
Then again, Halloween night is the one night of the year when suburban families will avoid all contact with people and turn the lights off after their candy has run out.
That's true. That's true. They could have been just like, tough shit, kid. We're all out of candy.
That's what I mean. It's like, you know, at that, I get that. It's nostalgic, but at the same time, it's pointing out the cynicism as well.
Well,
that was a recurring theme here. So
that was the story in Carthage of the girl who got stabbed. As she got stabbed, and she was going and knocking on people's doors, and she eventually died. Like, had crawled down the street and died in front of the library.
Well, there you go. Then that explains that scene right there.
Yeah.
So.
You know what I find interesting is that, I mean, we talk about Carpenter and his nostalgia for an America that might not have existed.
Yeah.
He's like the most progressive guy socially, yet the stuff he harkens back to is straight up Leave It to Beaver fucking American social ideals, which is really bizarre to me. Like, you know, you'd think he'd be trying to push everything even further.
Yeah, you know, those, especially with somebody Carpenter's age, their politics, you never know where they're going to go. You know, they're not, you can't cut them clean cut into any mold, because, you know, who know, you know, he might like the 50s, he might like the whole, like, you know, in the 50s you could smoke a cigarette walking through the grocery store, you know, that sort of thing, rather than the Leave It to Beaver aspects of it, and you know, the James Dean rebellion style stuff of it. He always strikes me as being sort of like, you know, he's lefty, but he probably is cynical as hell, and he's also got a good genetic swath of the Marlboro Man in there. You know, he kind of looks like him, and he's got the cigarette dangling out of his mouth, and he's kind of leathered up, and you know, he's got that sort of tough guy. He's got a more tough guy biker look, but that's because she wouldn't. That's why we need a John Carpenter Western. Oh, yeah. It'd be so great. Even if it was a vampire Western or something like that.
I mean, at this point, just do the straight Western,
and get
all the Carpenter character actors in it.
Oh, God.
Get every
Kurt
single
Russell,
one of them.
Kurt Russell is aged and weathered perfectly for a Western with...
Yeah, get,
with
so is Roddy Piper.
Oh, my God.
And Adrienne Barbeau as the madam of a brothel house, because she's definitely too old to be a prostitute now.
Yeah.
She's still That's acting. Still she was in that that serial killer show they have on... I can't remember the name of it.
The Killing?
No, it's the about the guy who's a serial killer who kills serial
killers.
Oh,
Dexter?
Dexter. She was on Dexter.
Yeah.
Dexter?
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 I always think of Dexter's Laboratory.
Yeah, exactly.
After a while, yeah, I would fucking kill Dee Dee too. You know? She keeps screwing up his experiments. So.
Oh, Dee Dee was a fucking bitch on that show.
Wasn't she, though?
Dexter's
mom anyway,
was hot,
his mom was hot. and now we've taken a strange turn.
I guess so, yeah.
But you get, you know, get Jamie Lee Curtis in there, get PJ Souls in there, get Pam Grier, get
get him Pam Grier,
Josh Hendrick, Ice Q, you know, just
Fat Baldwin,
yeah,
he's still around.
Get James, you know, get everybody in there. Just throw them all in there. The movie writes itself.
Fat Baldwin, I mean, ain't going nowhere.
If John Carpenter's listening, and I think we all know that he is, you know,
obsessively, I'm sure.
John, give us a call. We'll work something out.
John, we love you, baby. Don't change a thing. Let's do a lot. Sorry,
I can't speak for the hero in Luke, but I'll write. If you need writing, I'll write for free. Work for free.
Have your key people call my people.
Just remember, it's a Carthage boy. It's an unemployed Carthage boy, John.
But he's really from Bowling Green, Chris. Come on.
Listen, let me just have whatever scrap that I got, okay?
Just let me have this, damn you!
Why won't you listen? We tried to tell you!
He's it's upstate from, New York,
he's
there's nothing
from
there.
Carthage!
This is Carthage.
But
damn, oh, it's sad and pathetic. What, he's going to say this is Carthage, and just say it like Leonidas. Come on. Yeah.
Well, that's...
This really brought back so many memories for me growing up. Like I said, watching this, I always loved Halloween the season as a kid, you know, because I loved all the scary movies that would come on TV, because, you know, it had Channel 9, which is WOR, Channel 11, which was WPIX, and then back then you still got, you know, WTBS was the superstation, and they had their stock of Hammer movies and stuff they would show. But I could always count on seeing Halloween, Halloween 2, and Halloween 3 on WPIX. And I remember, because they would always start their movies at 8 o'clock, which meant that I'd be doing my homework, and I could stay up long enough, you know, that I could turn the lights out at like 9:30 and be asleep but watching the show, you know, until 10. And I always knew when Halloween was coming on, and it's like, yeah, I'd be jazzed the whole day, because they would run commercials all week about all the movies they were showing that week, you know? It's like, on Thursday, John Carpenter's Halloween. It's like, fuck yeah. Every time I watch it, I get brought back to that time in my life and those memories. So,
yeah, I watch it's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, but hey.
I watch that too, but, you know.
Yeah.
Someday there should be a mashup of the two.
Oh, ooh, frightening. Yeah, it is one of those movies. It's one of the movies that got me into horror, certainly. More so, not as much as Alien. I mean, that's, for me, that's like the movie. But it's just such a classy picture, man. People think of it as like sleazy and kind of depraved, but it's not. It's just well made, well shot. I mean, it's all total mood and atmosphere and music. Right. And it's scary. Like, I mean, I thought it was scary when I was a kid. I think if you sat down a 10-year-old kid now, they'd watch it and be like, "Fuck this."
Yeah.
But, you know, and then they tried to remake it, you know, with Rob Zombie, which
By the time they got to the part where the Shape was chasing Jamie Lee Curtis, I think a modern day kid would be riveted, but you'd have to get them to watch the movie for an hour. There's an hour of movie before the real just unending suspense starts. You know, it's an hour of build-up. So, yeah, it would be hard to get a modern kid to... You'd have to edit the first hour down to, like, 15 minutes. That would be a half hour short.
Well, then they made it too long with Rob Zombie's remake, and it's, like, literally the first 45 minutes is just all backstory, and then the next 90 minutes is a remake of Halloween.
Yeah,
and it's so, oh man, was I disappointed with that. But
really, I thought it was okay, but I'm hoping Rob Zombie goes back to doing his own movies, you know, it coming up out of whole cloth. I haven't seen his sequel to Halloween yet.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to after seeing what he gave us for the remake of Halloween.
I
want
to see it just because I'm really interested in him as a filmmaker. I think he could be like one of the great filmmakers we have if he consistently puts stuff out. But he's still in that early phase of where he's only got like four movies now.
Yeah.
So
and I know I really like his two Firefly Clan movies. I'm a big fan of House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects. So. I was a little disappointed with.
Corpses is 50-50 with me, but Devil's Rejects is like Tarantino level of filmmaking, I thought.
Yeah. Well, to me, you know, Corpses is part of it is that it's so much an homage to all the things that he's a fan of and that he likes that sometimes it can get a little bogged down in being too much of an homage. And then it's there's so much homage that sometimes things happen and we're not quite sure why, because you only have a finite amount of time to view it. So
well sometimes his homages work good. And so I didn't like all the like cuts of like blood dripping down the screen and tarantulas and stuff and like wham, but when he was paying tribute to the old Grindhouse and drive-in movies, you know, the whole extended shootout scene in slow motion and stuff, that was awesome. And I was just like, wow, this is like 50-50, but when he tries to put modern touches on it, it's not working. And then he got rid of all that stuff for
Devil's Rejects
and made it a straight up, it could have been on the screen in 1975, you know, in Times Square. It was awesome.
Yeah, I'd like to see him do something wholly original again. Mm-hmm. But hey,
we'll see.
What'll really blow your mind is he's only from about 40 minutes north of where I live, and it's pretty suburban.
I believe. So yeah.
I wonder where his love of redneck trash cinema comes from.
Well, yeah, because he didn't really live around it. Because if you grew up around that stuff, you get away from it when you get older. When you're younger, it has some sort of retro appeal from it, and it was very profitable for him with his music. So
yeah, definitely.
It's part of that whole tattoo culture and all that. You know that, and there's a bit of irony attached to it. It's there. I always look at the people who are into that sort of, in the Betty Page and the tattoos and the stuff They're sort of like hipsters who want to be tough hipsters. That's all. They just want to be, they're still hipsters, but they want to be tough guys. You know, they're into tough guys stuff, but they're just as
I'm too lame to be a hipster. I like the stuff I like unironically. So
exactly.
With my hat on my sleeve.
It's too much work for the irony.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like the classic bit from that episode of The Simpsons when they're at Hubbapalooza.
Oh, here comes that cannonball guy. He's cool.
Are you being sarcastic, dude?
I don't even know anymore.
Hey, we've pretty much done all the Carpenter movies. We've got left is The Ward, which we'll do a special on a later date. So.
Yeah, we have some other plans in the works.
Yes, well, coming up next, we're gonna do a show on horror movie soundtracks, so that'll be a little departure from style, because all we've been doing is John Carpenter.
John Carpenter with a little bit of Abbott and Costello thrown in there.
Yeah. And so yeah, in the coming month, you can look forward to that. You can look forward to coming up next month is King Kong month, so you'll be hearing a lot more from these guys and me in King Kong month. Yep. That's for sure. We got some plans for that. And then after that, Luke is going to take us into the world of Italy.
Yes. And I've been working on a Is it pronounced primer or primer? I always say primer.
I think you can actually say both. I think they're both accepted.
Well, we're working on a primer, basically, of Italian horror, and we're gonna do some Mario Bava, some Dario Argento, some Lucio Fulci, and then a few other probably lesser known in this country directors, Michele Soavi. There's a few others I want to do. It's probably not going to run as long as our Carpenter series has, because I know we've gotten some folks on the forum saying, "Hey, can you do this? I know you guys are doing John Carpenter, but can you do this? Can you do this?" So
we're going to start switching it up a little.
I'm looking forward to doing like a random horror movies, because man, we got a lot of them, you know, between the three of us to.
But I think the Italian job, for lack of a better term, I think this will be a lot of fun, just because these are films that lend themselves well to critique and to discuss. And I think that we can get some real good discussion and some real good feedback from folks. I know Mr. Joe Anthrax, he conversed a little bit when he watched Tenebrae, which is one of the films we're going to watch. And I think I'd like to get him on for that, because, you know, the discussions I have with him over Personal Message about Tenebrae, it's like, this is what I want to talk about. You know, these are things that a lot of people haven't necessarily seen, but are now, thanks to the efforts of companies like Anchor Bay and then later Shriek Show, these are available in this country commercially. And now we can, you know, it wasn't that, oh, well, I saw that in a filthy grindhouse in 1979 with a hooker giving a guy a hand job next to me, you know.
Now,
you know, and that's fun. I don't, you know, if that's your experience, dude, more power to you. But you know, it's not necessarily the best method for watching film for intellectual pursuits, let's just say.
Well, and speaking of Italy, I have my ears to the wall on certain things.
Yes.
There's some rumblings about a certain benefactor possibly making an appearance at some point. I'm not going to say anything more than that.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because and you brought up Joe Anthrax, and I got to get back to Joe Anthrax because I seem to recall talking to him about it, and it was probably like a year ago that we were pretty much going to try to suck him right into this show once we got to the Italian movies. So he may be a new regular on the show, but he just got back from a trip to Italy, and he had some stuff to talk to me about Mr. DiManzo too, but he didn't want to talk to me about it over the phone, so that was interesting. So I don't know what was up with that. So yeah, there's something brewing in Italy, so we might as well start doing some Italian.
You know what's brewing in Italy? Espresso. That shit's crazy.
Hey. I'll be here all week.
And you know, with you guys doing King Kong, didn't our benefactor, didn't he make a cash-in film on the 76 Kong?
Oh yeah.
With a Tremendous Ape or something like that.
It was something like gigantic tremendous ape monster attacks large American city or something like that.
The 50-foot large-breasted woman.
That might have been another movie.
I tell you, that was the Mondo version, I think.
That's the thing. He and De Laurentiis don't get along very well.
For obvious
reasons.
I'd like to get along with De Laurentiis' granddaughter.
Oh hell yeah!
she's real pretty.
Yes,
she got a real pretty mouth.
And the same with Argento's daughters and granddaughters.
God, she's just got the best, like, come fuck me face I've ever seen in my entire life. She's a dirty girl.
And you want to know what's funny? One that's up here is that I've seen a couple interviews with Asia Argento, and she has a story that she says one of her absolute earliest memories is being bounced on the knee of Lucio Fulci.
Oh, God.
That's just so random. Especially if you know that Lucio Fulci is just this kindly, old, grandfatherly-looking gentleman.
Who makes zombie movies.
Who makes hideous, hideous zombie movies.
Spill buckets and buckets of blood and worms on the screen, yeah.
Oh, boy. So, anybody want to have any last final thoughts about Halloween and about John Carpenter?
I got a final thought about Halloween. If you've never seen this movie, go fucking rent it already. Come on, people. Then again, you're listening to this show, of course you've seen it. You've been fucking weaned on this shit like it's titty milk. So,
if there is anybody listening to the show who hasn't seen Halloween, contact us. We're very curious. It's almost like anthropology to see how you exist and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that I agree. I mean, this film is so classic that I think we take it for granted. So, if by some freak of nature you haven't seen this and you're listening to our show, please watch it. And if you haven't watched it in a couple of years, rewatch it. You know, get some of your friends who maybe aren't horror hounds and say, hey, we're gonna watch a legit scary movie, and sit down and watch Halloween. I don't think you can go wrong with that.
Yeah, if you're a fan of slasher films, or if you're a fan of horror in the 80s, then you owe it to yourself to see this, because you wouldn't have any of that shit without it.
This is where it all started, yeah.
Yeah.
And... that was Black Christmas, but we won't talk about that.
Is that the one with Keira DeLay?
Yes.
Or was that Black
Summer? The one where Lois Lane dies.
Margot Kidder. I think Keira DeLay is in that one.
Yeah. I can't remember. Because it's not as good as Halloween. That's why. That's why we're sitting here talking about Halloween.
I don't think it made the impact that Halloween did.
No, Texas Chainsaw Massacre predates Halloween.
Sure.
But Halloween created the, TCM coined some of the generic cliches, but Halloween not only coined some of its own, but it also really put together the total package.
Well. Also, Halloween, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Last House on the Left, and what was the other Wes Craven one out in the desert that they remade too?
Hell's Have Eyes.
We're all sort of these, you know, low budget, really gritty underground movies, whereas Halloween was a multiplex movie. You know, it was filmed very. It looked expensive. It is a low budget movie. There wasn't much involved as far as having to spend money on anything. Donald Pleasance was probably the most expensive aspect of that movie, but it was filmed very. You know, the camera work is very professional and fluid, and you know it's filmed very widescreen and mounted cameras more than handheld cameras. And it has a very just mainstream look to it, you know? So it was, and whereas like the critics were sort of warning you about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when Halloween came out, the critics were like, this is great, you know?
What a difference 2 years makes, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Just takes a little time. And now it's funny, all those critics would probably go back and watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre and be just like, oh, okay. I don't know why I was so concerned about this.
You know, I have a real good Texas Chainsaw Massacre story, and I don't want to get too much of a tangent, but I'll do this real quick. The student paper at Clemson University, where I did my undergraduate degree, is called The Tiger. And one year in The Tiger, they had it was for the issue that came out the week of Halloween. They had this one staff writer wrote her top five and bottom five horror movies of all time. And I knew I was in trouble just from the top five list had some really bad crap on it. And the bottom five list, I remember two things on it. I remember one that she had Bruno Mattei's Rats on there. And I don't have a particular problem with Rats being on a bottom five horror movie list because it's not a good movie. And Bruno Mattei is, you know, known for making some crap. But her reasoning was that she had never seen it, but she had seen the cover a number of times at the video store, and it must be bad.
Oh, nice.
And then, and then on the bottom five was Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And she said, there's no plot at all in this movie. It's just a guy chasing all these naked girls around the woods with a chainsaw. It's horrible. I hate this movie.
Hadn't seen that one either, obviously.
Yeah. So I wrote her an email, and I said that I think you may be confusing Texas Chainsaw Massacre with another film, maybe one of its sequels. I said, because there's no nudity in the movie, and there's not naked girls being chased around the woods. And she wrote back and said, well, whatever, I know the movie's terrible, I know what I'm talking about. And I wrote it back and suggested that maybe the next time you write an article, you should actually watch the films you intend to critique. She never got back to me after that.
That's too much work.
Too much work for the. I did write a letter to the editor when I graduated from Clemson saying that I wanted to thank them for publishing The Tiger on such excellent paper stock because it made it really good to paint models on.
Oh.
And I didn't feel bad when I spilled paint on their words. So.
Wow. Yeah. You couldn't have made a TP reference for them instead?
You should have followed up with a review of the top five and the bottom five, like, rom-com movies or something like that. And I didn't watch this piece of shit, but I saw the preview for it.
Bad.
It had, you know, it had Walking on Sunshine playing in the preview. I knew that was a piece of shit. Right
on
the bottom
God,
five
that's one of my... Oh, I fucking hate that song.
You know the movie's not going to be good if they show in the preview that they use... Walking on Sunshine, you know you have to avoid it at all costs.
Unlike, say, a film like Halloween, which has Blue Oyster Cult.
Yes.
Right, but if you saw a Halloween preview and it had Walking on Sunshine, then maybe you might want to check it out. That might be something really interesting, but...
Yeah, alternately, a rom-com that had Blue Oyster Cult.
If I wasn't so lazy, I would... get an old Halloween and just my last thought on Halloween is the ad campaign to Halloween was so awesome, scared the living shit out of me as a kid. It was just a slow, the TV ad was just a slow zoom in on the pumpkin. It was, you know, the night he came home. The whole tagline, the night he came home, was, scared the shit out of every little kid. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Gotta love it.
All right, we'll be back next time with music.
Music makes the people come together.
I didn't say singing. Maybe that wasn't singing.
Oh, yeah.
That was warbling.
You and your warbling.
Excellent. Do you ever find yourself going to Amazon.com and buying some record or movie or some stupid thing that two true freaks have been talking about so that you can catch up on it or you've been reminded of it or something? Well, now, how about this? Instead of going to Amazon.com, go to twotruefreaks.libsyn.com and follow our link to Amazon.com. When you do that, if you buy something over at Amazon, we get a little cut out of it. Which is awesome because we love money and it won't cost you a thing.
You can sponsor an episode of this or any other of your favorite Two True Freaks affiliated shows. Simply click the PayPal link on our website, donate any amount at all, tell us which show you're choosing and what message, if any, you'd like us to read on your behalf, and you will be an official sponsor of that show's very next episode, with your message read in the show's opener. It's that easy, and there is no minimum donation. Be a show sponsor today. Visit our website at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Libsyn is spelled LIBSYN.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Join our forum at forumforgeeks.com, where you can discuss all of the shows on our feed with us and your fellow listeners.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
And hey, you can friend me, Scott Gardner, on Facebook, too. My name is spelled Scott Gardner.
You can friend me on Facebook, too, if you can find me.
Now available, Two True Freaks t-shirts. See our website for details.
Two True Freaks is a very proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check that out at www.comicspodcast.com, where you can hear our new episodes when we put them up.
We are also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts. For more information, visit comicbooknoise.com/league.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We're off? Good. Well, that ought to hold the little bastards.
Gentlemen, I'm here tonight to tell you a very strange story. A story so strange that no one will believe it. I'm going to show you the greatest thing your eyes have ever beheld. He was a king and a god in the world he knew. But now he comes to civilization. Merely a captive. A show to gratify your curiosity. Ladies and gentlemen, look at Khan. the eighth wonder of the world.
You know, maybe my luck has changed.
Listen, there is a girl out there who might be running for her life from some gigantic turned-on ape.
Are you goddamn chauvinist pig ape?
June 2012 is King Kong Month on Two True Freaks.